going to give a quick recap from last week, and then we will continue and Emir Tashem conclude this topic, which is dealing with Arkos, which means secular court. And our fundamental question is, what's the prohibition to go to secular court? And in which circumstances is it permitted to go to secular court? So as we mentioned last time, there's a pasuk in the Torah, Parshas Mishpatim, that says, Eile ha-mishpatim asher tasim lifneim. These are the mishpatim, the ordinances that you should put in front of them. And the Gemara says, makes a drasha, that we have to put the litigation in front of a beis din lifneihem and not in front of a non-Jewish court. Many of the poskim say that it is a biblical prohibition to go to secular court. And the reason we explained is that somebody who goes to secular court is showing that they have a preferred set of laws, and the implication is a superior set of laws than the Torah to deal with various issues and litigations that comes up, which is obviously false. The post can view it as an affront and blasphemy to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Torah. We have the set of laws, the Torah, that is the ideal way to deal with disputes. That is the way we should be dealing with them and not going to the secular court. We said the prohibition applies even if the litigants agree, they consent. Let's go to secular court. That is irrelevant. It is still prohibited. And we say the concept is also not that you're going to an idolatrous court or anything like that. It's going to a court that is using a set of laws other than halacha. And the next step then is, even if the judges are Jewish in a different court, but they're not adhering to the requirements of halacha in deciding the case in front of them, that would be a significant problem. The next step, again, is applying that to the state of Israel that has a set of secular courts, but it uses secular law, the English common law, other sets of laws, but not halacha. Halacha is only one of the determinants that are used in Israel, in the courts. The Chazon Ish, Rav Tzipas Achfrank, Rav Herzog all say that going to such a court is not only problematic, but highly problematic. It's even worse than going to a regular secular court, for example, outside of Israel, because we have a system of secular law that has been adopted, unfortunately, in our state, the state of Israel. It should be using halacha, and it has gone, unfortunately, off the derech. Okay, when does the prohibition kick in? So certainly, if somebody issues a summons, that means an invitation, or a demand, more like, and what demand is better, to come to secular court, a summons. Someone gets a summons to come to secular court, that is a prohibition. And Rav Sternbach says that the prohibition is each and every day that that case is in a secular court. It is an ongoing prohibition. It needs to be taken out of the secular context and brought to a beis din. And there are poskim that say that even signing a contract, and in the contract saying if something grows wrong, we will litigate in a secular forum, a federal court, a state court, whatever it may be, a non-beis din context, even that would be problematic. At PS, we are going to talk about arbitration. That will be a future topic of ours. Is that also problematic? Are we just saying if the choice of law in that contract is to go to a secular court, that is that the problem?
I just wanted to ask, so this is if you are being sued as well, right?
Like, we'll get to that right now. We're going to get to the times when you can. If you're the defendant, Chas v'Shalom, if that should ever happen, is that a problem also? And then you can't defend yourself. Okay, so the poskim say that this prohibition, if the prohibition in a certain case exists, does it also apply to those who facilitate the litigation? For example, an attorney who is obviously bringing the case, drawing all the documents. So the poskim say absolutely. The Ramapa says absolutely it applies to those who facilitate bringing the case in secular court. And there are poskim who even say that it's not only a messiah or a lifneiver assisting somebody to violate an issue of going to secular court, but that an attorney is a primary violator. The Mishnah Halacha says that it's a primary violator of the halacha of going to secular court, even though it's not his claim. He's representing a client, but still he could be viewed as the primary violator of going to the secular court. Okay, last time we started going through the exceptions to the rule, right? Are they exceptions or the concept?
I wanted to ask you, does Beis Din have any power to enforce their rulings?
So it's a very good question. Typically, I talk about in the United States and what we also in Israel, when you go to a Beis Din, what you actually do is the litigants sign together that they are committing to adhere to the decisions of the Beis Din. So effectively, just like an arbitration, if you go to an arbitration, the Beis Din is viewed by law, by secular law, as an arbitration, as a valid form of arbitrating. We said arbitration is binding. That's the difference between arbitration and mediation. So somebody goes to a Beis Din. The Beis Din, one of the first things, if not the first thing, is sign the shtar, sign the document that you are agreeing to adhere to our decision. Once that decision is made, that is binding, and we will talk about today what you do. For example, if the Beis Din makes a decision and the defendant or the plaintiff didn't like the decision, one of the litigants didn't like the decision and they reneged, what can you do then? So Mir Tashem will get to today. It's a very important question. Is there teeth in it? It's nice to go to Beis Din, go through the whole process, but if there's no teeth in it, then what do, right? Okay, so the first exception, we went through two of them last time. First exception is somebody litigating with a non-Jew. We said based on the Medrash, ideally that non-Jew should be taken to a Beis Din, but the Metzius is that's not the case. Typically, somebody who's not Jewish is not going to be very prone and in favor of going to a Beis Din. They're going to prefer, and we can understand it, a secular court, something they're more familiar with. So if that's the case, if they say, I'm willing to go to Beis Din, they offer it, great, we should go to Beis Din, but if that's not the case, it would be permitted to go to secular court, bring that person to secular court. It wouldn't be a violation. So that's exception number one. Exception number two, if the counterparty, the litigant, let's assume is Jewish, refuses to go to a Beis Din. And we brought a Gemara that says, and I'll go through the Hebrew, the English says as follows, if you called your friend, not really your friend probably, your litigant, and he did not listen to your call, throw the heavy wall at him. Right? Take the wall, lift up a wall, and throw it at him. We said that's the concept is throw the book at him. Legal books are pretty heavy. Throw the secular legal book at him, not obviously the Judaica at him. And the concept that the poskim say here is we're not lifting up walls and throwing at people. That's not a Jewish concept. But it means that if somebody refuses to go to secular court, it would be permitted then, if somebody refuses to go to a Beis Din, a Jewish court, it would be permitted to go to a secular court. And we said, very important is what's the process then? There are Rishonim, Rav Paltayu says that if he refuses, you can go to a secular court. But the Rambam says, no. First, what you have to do is you have to bring him in. You have to attempt to bring him into a Beis Din. If he refuses to go to the Beis Din, then you get permission from Beis Din to bring that litigant, that defendant, to a secular court. So you have to go through the procedures of first going to a Beis Din and only thereafter getting the consent of Beis Din. This is how the Shulchan Aruch paskens. And once you have the consent of Beis Din, it will be permitted to go to secular court. Now, the custom nowadays is to send three hazmanas, three summonses from the Beis Din. You go to Beis Din, you give all your information. This is the defendant. This is how you can reach them. They will send a summons three times. Different batei din have different time lapses. If they don't respond to the first, 30 days, for example, send the second. Don't respond to the second, send the third. If the person does not respond to the third, the Beis Din would issue what is typically called, different batei din use different language for it, a siruv, literally a refusal. The defendant, the person being summoned, has refused to appear to the Beis Din, and the Beis Din then grants permission to the plaintiff to go to secular court. So you'd have to go through that procedure. Now, Rav Sternbach in his Tshuvas van Hagos explains to us what's this concept of three times. It's not like somebody gets a water bill that you don't pay it, which is wrong also. But, okay, you don't pay it the first time, the second time, and you wait until they threaten to cut your water off, and then you pay it. That's obviously problematic also. But he says that's not the concept. Somebody who gets a hazmana to a Beis Din and summons the Beis Din has to answer the first time. You have to respond to it or else it is a slap in the face of the Beis Din. It's an issur to not respond when somebody is summoned. Now the person can go and say, I'm here, I'm appearing, but I want to go to a different Beis Din. That's okay, that's acceptable. We're talking about somebody that doesn't show up at all. That is a problem. That's problematic. Now nonetheless, we still give the person three opportunities. Hopefully we will convince him over time to come. Maybe he missed the first, missed the second one. So we do go through that process. But it does not mean the fact that we go through three three invitations, three summonses, does not mean that the person can ignore number one and number two. Okay, so that is exception number two. Person has refused. We've gone through the process, sent three invitations, three hasmanas, and the person has not appeared, has not responded. So number three, first was a non-Jew. Number two is a Jew, doesn't respond three times. Number three is, how about dealing with a secular Jew? Dealing with a secular Jew who we know will not be responding. Is not Shomer Shabbos, is Mechal Shabbos, profane Shabbos, in public, the person doesn't adhere to the Torah, so why should this be any different? So Diane Weiss says as follows, the Minchas Yitzchak has a very important tshuva on this. He says the typical custom is to send three invitations, three summons out to the defendant. However, Hanahu Getzlenu, when it comes to dealing with somebody who is an Apikoros, somebody who is rejects Judaism, or somebody who profanes Shabbos in public, we customarily do not bother going through the process of sending three hasmanas, three summonses. We simply send one, and if it's ignored, then the Beis Din will issue a siruv, or issue permission to the plaintiff to take that person. Why bother being slapped in the face by the person sending out three hasmanas and delay the plaintiff for 3 months or whatever it takes in order to have the person ignore us? We can send one hasmana and then permit the plaintiff to go to Beis Din. Or, if the Beis Din decides that shehi bichlal ilan, this person is no way ever going to respond to a summons to come to Beis Din, v'lotzayis dina, wouldn't listen to the dean at all, wouldn't listen to our decisions, we don't have to send any hasmanas from the get-go, the Beis Din may issue permission, give a consent to the person to go to the secular. For example, this person comes, plaintiff comes in, wants to summon somebody to a Beis Din. The Beis Din says, oh, Yanko, we know him. We've had 18 people. Three people summons him to suits, and he's ignored every hasmana. Why bother sending another hasmana, another summons to him? The Beis Din can simply say, okay, go ahead, take him to secular court, even without sending any hasmanas. And Rav Sternbach explains, what's the concept there? If we take a step back, there are two concepts here. Number one is that we have to make an attempt. We have to send Hasmana, make an attempt to bring him to Beis Din. However, if we know that's going to fail, we still have a second concept of requiring the consent of the Beis Din. So if the Beis Din says, we're Dean number one, we need to get him in here, but we know he's ignored, we still have to revert to concept number two to get the consent of the Beis Din. And one more important concept here, what's the concept? What's this deal of getting the permission of the Beis Din? The concept there is that the Beis Din is effectively saying someone who has refused to come to a Beis Din, a Jewish court, we need to deal with him. We still need a mechanism to having this plaintiff taken care of, not losing out. The Beis Din is effectively saying we are going to extend our arms. We're going to penalize the defendant, and we're going to extend our arm to include the instrument of a secular court in dealing with this defendant. So it's not like the concept here is not that the Beis Din is punting it over to the secular court. The Beis Din is effectively saying, we are now going to use the secular court as our tool, and that's the consent. We're consenting to use this as our tool to deal with the defendant. Which is when Daniel. You know, I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. I wasn't going to get into Tinoch Shenishba, but I can in a little bit. Very good question. Yeah.
What if the Beis Din knows that the secular court is going to rule differently based on the case?
Okay, so it's a great question. The Poskim disagree on that. Some Poskim will say that when you get your reward in secular court, we can still consent to his going. Some Poskim say that if you get a reward that is higher than a Beis Din would agree to, you'd have to give back the excess. And some Poskim say once we permit the person to go to secular court, that permit includes getting a higher return, getting a higher reward than a Beis Din. And that fits in with the Gemara and Baba Kama that says throw a heavy wall at him. Why a heavy wall? Why a big wall? Because that's the knas. That's included in the penalty. You didn't come to Beis Din. You're going to have to face the risks of getting a higher reward against you. Okay, so let's continue. There are additionally poskim that say that if we know that this person will absolutely refuse to come to Beis Din, not only do we not need to send three hasmanas, Not only do we not need to send one hazmana, not only do we need to say, we can do away with three hazmanas, we can do away with one hazmana, we can even do away with the consent of the basin if we've gone to a rav, a posek, an individual rav, not a basin, a Jewish court of three, we've gone to an individual rav, we've discussed with him what the issues are at hand, and he consents, he himself can send out a hazmana to the defendant, and if the person doesn't respond, then he can give a consent to go to secular court. So it's interesting. Just this morning, I had an issue that I had to get a psak on about potentially taking somebody to secular court, and I went through the facts with a certain one of the gedolim in Bnei Brak, and he said, "No, in this instance, go get a consent of a beis din." I had a different shayla a few years ago that I'd ask him. The same question, but different facts. And in that case, he said, you don't know, need to go to beis din. Based on these facts, you can go straight to secular court. So we need to ask a shayla, because the facts of who we're dealing with and the track record of the individual have a major impact on that. You can go to the same rub, and sometimes he's going to say, go to beis din, send out three hazmanas. Or sometimes he's going to say, you know what, in this case, you can go straight to secular court. There's no way that person is going to hear. Now, the poskim would say, still, you have to ask the rav, but the default is going to beis din, three hazmanas, at least one hazmana, requiring the consent of the beis din. Okay, next question then along that line is, what happens if you are involved, the defendant is a company, not an individual corporation, owned by Jews, but in their bylaws, their governing laws, it says that they need to litigate in a secular court. It doesn't say we won't go to a beis din, but it would say anything that comes up, or that maybe their insurance carriers require it. Could be that also. We'll talk about insurance in a little bit. You need to go to secular court. What should be done in that case? You know, there's no way that they are going to be coming to beis din if their bylaws, their charter, their governing laws of the company say that anything has to be handled in a secular court. So Rav Sternbach, again, as Chuvash Van Hago says, at least go to beis din, send out a hazmana, get the consent of beis din, or even maybe just using the psak of a rav, as we said before, but we still should not go straight to secular court without going through the proper procedures of going to the beis din, getting their consent, or at least a major posek that would say, okay, in this case, it's not a problem to go to secular court. Okay, next question. Daniel asked about a tinok shenishba, somebody who grew up, had no concept of Judaism. He's the defendant. We want to bring him to court. Can we go straight to secular court or no? So the Mishnah Lachas was asked the following question. What happens if you're not clear? You're not sure if the defendant will agree to go to beis din or not. When we're talking about that you can go straight to secular court, that the beis din can be mekal, go for only one hazmana, no hazmana, the rav can say go straight to secular court, get a psak like that. How about if you're not sure? Maybe the defendant will agree, or maybe the defendant will not agree. What will we say in that case?
Try.
Ronan, you're exactly correct. There's a concept in Avlacha of safek de'oraisa le'chumra. When you have a doubt on a biblical prohibition, we have to be machmir. So that would be the same thing here. Most poskim say that going to secular court is a biblical prohibition. If we are not sure here whether the person will consent to going to a beis din or not, that is a suffix, it's a doubt relating to a biblical prohibition, we would be obligated to go through the process of going to beis din, and the beis din then will decide three or one, whatever, but that's up to them. We would have to go through the beis din process. Okay, number four. Number one was non-Jew. Number two was person refuses three times. Number three was somebody we know for certain is not going to come. He's a Mechal HaShabbos b'Faresia. We know for certain he's not going to come. Number four, but we still have to should go through the process of getting consent. Based on what consent. Number four is, what happens if Chas V'Shalom Lo Aleinu, somebody is the defendant, gets sued by somebody, say Jewish, gets sued by Jewish, the person ignored, going to Beis Din, did the wrong thing, but now, let's give me a name of somebody who's the defendant. Somebody not named here, we'll call him Jake. Anyone named Jake? Okay, Jake gets sued. He's the defendant now. Can he defend himself and go to secular court? So the poskim say, obviously in that case, you can go to secular court. There's no problem. You don't need permission. The beis din if somebody's the defendant. And also, Rav Avadya Yosef talks about an attorney also can represent as on the defense side, not a problem. Somebody's sued. Maybe it's good to call up the plaintiff and say, you know, we should be in beis din, but if you know that's not going to happen, or he says no, the attorney follows the Yechavadas Paskins Mutar Lo'orechdin Liatzko LeHatzil Oshok Miyad Ashko. It's a positive thing to represent such a thing. You have to save this person who is being brought to secular court against halacha. Okay, so that's number four, being a defendant, not a problem. You can go to secular court. Number five is a very interesting question. How about if the defendant has insurance coverage that will be covering the damage? For example, lo aleinu, Jake is in a car accident and he wants to sue the defendant, the person who caused the accident, in secular court. Why? Because he can get a higher recovery in secular court than a base in. And who's going to ultimately pay for the damages?
Insurance company.
The insurance company. Jake's got insurance company. He's covered. I mean, we may have to talk about his deductible. You know, the deductible, or maybe his premium is going to go up. That's always the concern. Don't report it to insurance. Their premium is going to go up. So this question was asked to the Tshuvas van Hagas, Rav Sternbach, again. There was a certain man whose daughter was hurt badly. Doesn't say exactly what it was. Doesn't say it's a car accident. She was hurt badly, and the person who caused the accident to the daughter was insured by a Jewish-owned insurance company. And the person whose daughter it was, we'll call it Jake again. Jake's daughter, Jake. He brings the case in secular court. Why? Because he can get a higher recovery. He didn't ask a rav. And then afterwards, while the process is going on in secular court, he asks a psak of Rav Sternbach, did I do the wrong thing being in secular court? I can get a much higher recovery in secular court than going to a beis din. So Rav Sternbach says as follows, the concept of insurance. Anyone familiar with how insurance works? Why do people get insurance?
In case something bad happens
that they don't have to incur the risk. It's like outsourcing the risk to the insurance company. Why should we bear the risk? That's why we have people have medical insurance, right? If something bad happens, then the insurance company pays. If somebody's in a car accident, lo aleinu, the insurance company pays. You want to outsource that risk to somebody else. So, and the concept here is that the person who causes the damage or needs the medical help or whatever it is, they shouldn't have financial harm because of it. They pay premiums. The insurance company and that individual have agreed together, I'm going to pay your premiums on an annual basis, monthly basis, whatever it is, and you're going to cover me. And you're going to pay. If there are any claims, you have to pay out. So that's the concept. They have a contract between them. And that's the commercial understanding. And if there's a car accident and somebody causes a car accident, then the person who's injured goes after effectively the insurance company of the person who caused the accident. So based on that, Rav Sternbach says that in this case, it makes sense because that's the commercially accepted way of doing things that the insurance company should pay based on secular law, secular norms, and not based on halachic norms. That premiums were set based on that understanding. Premiums, you paid premiums based on the insurance company paying on that. Now, he says, still, I feel a little bit uncomfortable saying you can go to secular court for this totally. So what you should do is first go to a beis din. Beis din will give you a consent to litigate this in secular court. Fine. They'll say, go, this is an insurance claim against the company. Goes to litigate it, and then afterwards he says, come back to the beis din for them to approve it. Maybe they'll make some minor changes to the award that the secular court makes, but that way it's still under the envelope of the beis din. Now, he does say also that he had a similar case, and he was asked about a car accident, and there the defendant, the person who caused the car accident, said, if the whole concept here is that I'm not supposed to be damaged at all. The insurance company is supposed to bear all the damage. I outsourced it, but my premiums are going to go up. So I am being damaged if we're going to secular court. So if Sternbach says, okay, I can buy that, that makes sense to me. So what you should do is adjust the award that to build in that there should be some cushion for the increased premiums that the defendant is going to have to pay. In other words, the secular court gives a grant, gives an award to the person who was damaged. The person who's damaged should give back a little bit of the award, of the high award, because the person's premium is going to have to go up. But that doesn't mean that you can't go to secular court. Okay, that's number five. If the insurance company is covering, based in will consent, go to a secular court. Yeah?
If you have insurance and like your insurance is going to be suing their insurance, you know, when it's just between your insurances, do you have to try to ask your insurance company on your behalf to go to beis din?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. And certainly if they're not Jewish owned, there's no question that you wouldn't have to, but they're never going to anyway.
Right.
So I don't see that that's happening, and they're going to ignore you, right? They have the right.
Right.
We have no right to request that they go to a Beis Din. We have no legal authority, right? And they will laugh at us. So we wouldn't have any responsibility to do that. Okay, number six is along the lines of what Ryan asked before, is that when the two litigants came in on a practical basis, they sign an agreement that the decision of the arbitrator, which is the Beis Din in our case, is enforceable in secular court. In other words, hopefully we don't have to get there, but if one of the parties isn't happy and says, I'm reneging on it, I'm not going to adhere to the psak of the Beis Din, the other party can go to a secular court and enforce that psak. Because Beis Din doesn't have policemen. They can't force people to adhere to the psak, but what they can do is they can make it binding in secular court. And when somebody tries to renege on the decision of the Beis Din, the winner in the Beis Din can go to secular court and have it enforced. Now, the poskim say, do you need the consent of the Beis Din to go enforce it in the secular court or not? The poskim say, no, that wouldn't make any sense. It's no problem going to the Beis Din to enforce. Why? Because you're just doing what the Beis Din wanted. Beis Din made a psak. Somebody's not listening to it. I don't need a consent of the Beis Din to go and enforce their psak. They already gave a psak. This needs to be enforced. So that is another reason why we would be able to, and we wouldn't even need a consent of a Beis Din. Okay, number seven is very interesting. Something called an injunction. What's an injunction? Anyone help me out here? An injunction? It comes in various forms. You go to a court, and basically, and what we'll talk about here is freezing assets of somebody. If we'll call him the plaintiff, somebody's concerned that a defendant, somebody owes him money. And the guy is going to run out of town. He's going to empty out the bank accounts. He's going to take all of his assets and head off to South Africa, right? Something like that. That happened recently. A certain Jewish person headed off to South Africa and is avoiding extradition to Israel. So if something like that happens, which is unfortunate, if anyone's familiar with what I'm talking about, it's very unfortunate. So the plaintiff here is concerned that the assets are going to be walking away, and he's owed money. He's owed those assets. He's owed part of those assets. So the Shuvas Maram Pimpano says as follows. When it comes to Amalva, for example, somebody gave a loan. Shalonimlach v'kadam la'akev mamon alova yader kos, and he went to secular court. And the concept here is that he wants to freeze the assets, protects himself so those assets don't disappear. And afterward, he wants to go to a Beis Din to deal with what's going to happen with those assets. But he needs to immediately freeze those assets to ensure he's not harmed. The Maram Pimpadua says that there's a distinction between, is he trying to avoid having a loss? Yesh chiluk rab ben makam pseida. Kegon, da'ad da'az lebe dina. If the concept is he wants to make sure that he doesn't incur a loss, because until he can go to a Beis Din, until the Beis Din is going to convene, that money is going to disappear. Or is it a case that it's not a loss, that he could have gone to Beis Din and the Beis Din could deal with the issues? If the Beis Din is not the proper form to deal with the issues, he needs to go to a secular court to save his assets, then it would be permitted to go to the secular court, ask for that injunction, ask for that restraining order, have those assets frozen, and then deal with it in the Beis Din afterwards. Now, the Tshuvas Van Haga says it's permitted to go to secular court for this purpose, to get that injunction. Aval chayav imzos lehodia la'anifa. What you have to do is you still have to inform the defendant, it's not that I am going to secular court. I'm going to secular court to freeze the assets, and then we should be going to a Beis Din to deal with the allocation of the assets. So that's an important thing. That is number seven. If there's no relief that can be granted in a Beis Din, one would be permitted to go to a secular court, freeze the assets, and then go to Beis Din. Yeah, Ben?
About Ryan's question before, does the secular court always acknowledge the Beis Din's sock?
Okay, so not always. If they've signed that agreement in advance, then yes. If they have not signed, and that's every arbitration. If you haven't signed that, it's going to be binding.
It has the power of arbitration.
It has the power of an arbitration.
Okay.
Same power as an arbitration. Any arbitration, you can sign in advance because arbitration is binding, but it's only binding if both parties, litigants, consent it's being bound by the arbitrator. Same thing with a Beis Din. The law looks at a Beis Din as an arbitration.
Okay.
But you have to sign that it's going to be binding first. You have to consent it's being binding. Okay, so number 8 is as follows. If there is a clear amount that is owed to somebody, and the defendant is not debating that he owes the money, he's just not paying. Just not paying, refusing to pay, but he consents. He had gave him a check, check bounced, wasn't forged, whatever. I agree, I owed you the money, I'm just not paying you. When somebody would go to execute on that amount, it's not that he's going to the secular court to look into the facts or not. If it's like a clear amount, he's agreeing that that amount is owed. The Tshuvas Maharsham says as follows, that he found in a clear amount that's owed, that the defendant is not disagreeing. He agrees, okay, it's owned. You don't need the consent of the Beis Din to go and collect on that amount. So that's number 8. We have 8 exceptions when it will be permitted to go to a secular court. Sometimes we need to first go to Beis Din, go through the process. Beis Din will give consent, but under those 8 scenarios, possibly more, it would be permitted to go to a secular court. Now, one area that we did not talk about is criminal law, the criminal area. And, for example, reporting someone who is violating the law, that you have to go to the secular authority, somebody who is stealing, somebody who is abusing another, whatever it may be, that is a whole topic that we have in of itself. We've been talking about civil law, not criminal law, and that touches on 2 very important topics. Number 1 is Dina de Malchusa Dina, the law of the land is the law. If the person is violating a law that a Jew is also obligated to adhere to, so that's question number 1. Did we cover that with anyone here? I don't think so. So we haven't done that in a long time. Dina de Malchusa Dina, the law of the land is the law. The other question that we have is Misira, turning over a Jew to the secular authority. So those are both. Do we have that when anyone was here? We haven't done that in a while either, yeah? So that was about 1.5 years ago or something like that. So Mesira. So those are topics that we're going to cover independently. Reporting somebody that's cheating on his taxes, etc. That would all be in the criminal realm, and that has to be analyzed not only from the question of going to a secular court, but also from a Dina de Malchusa Dina perspective, and also from a Mesira, Isra Mesira perspective. Okay, just a couple more comments, and then we're going to try to answer our case. Labor issues, if there are employer-employee issues, there's typically special courts, labor courts in certain countries. Still there, Jewish employee should attempt to go to a Beis Din. However, if one is refusing to, we could go through the same issues of going to Beis Din, consenting, and going through that process. If there's a certain type of process going in front of a municipality, and typically that would include a zoning issue, for example, or giving somebody a building permit or something like that, that there's a special committee or laws in the municipality itself, in Israel and the Iriyah, typically we can't deal with that in a Beis Din context. We should. For example, a neighbor wants to build real high. You don't want him to build real high. You should go to Beis Din. However, if the person refuses again, or if the Iriyah doesn't really care at all about what a Beis Din would say, and if you don't go to the through the secular processes that will negatively impact you, then it would be permitted to go to the municipality and deal with it through the secular processes. Okay, so that's it in a nutshell. We've gone through the prohibition itself of going to secular courts. It's a deraisa. However, there are times, and we went through 8, when it would be permitted, either with the consent of Beis Din, or sometimes even without the consent of Beis Din. We had a case here that talked about Chaim Semler, who was the plumber who was hired by Mayor Solstein, who was the rich landlord who stiffed him. He signed a purchase order agreeing that an estimate that the work would be approximately $400. The plumber went through the process, fixed whatever was necessary to be fixed, and then the landlord says, I'm not paying you, I'll pay you your costs. That's what we agreed upon, $50, but the other $350 of your labor is on you as we agreed. The plumber pulls out the estimate that was signed by the landlord. Landlord is now reneging, saying, if you enforce that, you will never work here again. And the question is, he wanted, the plumber says, not happy, obviously. And the question is, what are his options? It's a hard question. This isn't like an easy case that we have that after we go through the top book, we can see where it goes. Ryan, what do you think on this?
I was just going to ask one side thing. Is a Jew allowed to go to a Sharia court, like a Muslim court?
No. The concept is not over the Avodah Zarah. The concept is using a set of laws other than halacha.
But you're not permitted to do that.
Same answer. Same prohibition. Even if they use the same law, but it's a secular court. Even if they use halacha, but it's a secular court, we can't go. We need to go to a Beis Din. Okay, so how about on our case?
What's the difference between the secular court that uses halacha and the Beis Din?
We'll talk about it more when we talk about arbitration. Let's punt on that. Okay, what do we think here?
Can you take him to a Beis Din, but not in that city?
Okay, so it's you can in theory, but he has to consent then. So that's difficult, because if he's not going to consent, why should he consent? And he knows this Beis Din, and he davens in the Av Beis Din Shul, right? So you can't force him. You can't force him to go elsewhere. Secular court, is that an option?
No.
So secular court is...
permission.
What? You need permission. So if you would have to go to a Beis Din first and get permission. Right? This doesn't fit in under any of our criteria. Now, secular court... we have to put on the side with, in the absence of permission. Going to a Beis Din, his concern here is that maybe a Beis Din will be biased. Now, it happens to be that if they are true Yirei Shemaim, and this Beis Din has a good reputation, that should not be a concern. Just because the guy is a wealthy guy, but we have to have emunah, we have to have faith that the Dayanim are going to make the proper decisions. If it's a Beis Din that unfortunately has had a bad reputation in the past, we want to avoid going to that Beis Din. Maybe he should go to a Beis Din, a different Beis Din in the city, or maybe get consent, speak to a major posek and see what can be done. It could be that in this case, the major posek would say, you're in a pickle here, there's a problem, so you can go to a secular court or an arbitration of some sort, but he would have to agree, the person would have to agree to an arbitration, would have to agree to that up front. So a real shaila has to be asked, ideally go to the Beis Din of the city. The standing Beis Din, maybe there are multiple. If it's a big city, there are going to be multiple Batei Din that one can go to. So find one that one is comfortable with. But if there's discomfort based on facts of a bad reputation, a Shaila needs to be asked of a major Gadol. Yeah.
So, I mean, hopefully it's a good Beis Din and he goes and he wins his case. But then this guy's going to, like, publicly shame
him. Okay, so it's a good question. On the practical side of things, let's bet, that's the halacha. On the practical side of things, this is $400. So even if he has a halachic right, which he does, 100%, I once remember hearing from a certain rabbi, he was giving a shir on raising children and chinuch yiladim and stuff, and he had this phrase, Rav Avner Kavas is his name. He says, there's a difference between being correct and being chacham, having seichel. And sometimes we may be right, but you have to have chokhmah. So I think that's the case here, that the ethical thing to do, the right, take a stand, is to bring the guy to Beis Din. He's probably sift a lot of people. But ultimately, you have to be a chacham. You have to make also the right decision. You don't have to be right, you have to make the intelligent decision. And I think in this case would be a time that you want to punt on the $400. Now, if it's $4 million... obviously, you're not going to punt on it, right? That's a time to be... The chacham would be to take him to court. But I think that thank you for that question. You have to blast the reality into it also.
Would there be anything to, like, publicly... like, to not just take $50, but, like, let people... like, is that considered Lashon Hara to let other plumbers know if, like, someone comes up and says, should I go work for this guy?
Yeah, and you know, you're getting into an area that... of Lashon Hara, and I don't think you want to go public. It could be that this is something that we do quietly. The Chofetz Chaim has a number of areas, another, I think, like 7 requirements of when, if we see somebody is going to take a loss, we can inform him. And it's not a problem of Lashon Hara. So you'd go through the 7 different steps that the Chofetz Chaim has. We cover them when we talk about whistleblowing at work, and we'll go through the seven. So I think you'd have to go through those seven and see if it's applicable. Yeah, I don't think that's the right way to do it, because somebody like this is going to sue you for slander.
It's probably the same problem anyway. He's gonna.
Yeah. I don't think that's the right way to do it. Yeah, Ryan.
You were saying last week you've got that passage that says like you can't give a judge money because it blinds him or something. So surely there's like a derisive prohibition against going to his local basting because they've got like an interest they benefited from.
Leaf naive lotita mirchol. I don't know. I don't think we can assume that because you think about the great dayanim out there that they're a real yirei shamayim. We're not gonna. But if we're really concerned, you said the question is a real concern, then I don't know if it's a leaf naiver in that case. But
you've heard stories of like great, like I think it was like a Tanner who wouldn't take any favor from someone because he was worried that it might blind
right.
them. So
right,
maybe,
right. Yeah. Okay, here. Yeah, Dan.
Well, with regards to the labor law issues, like if you have a Jewish employee, what if you're in a situation where you need to take action against an employee, but you have certain company policies that dictate it? Are your company policies in any way seen as like a secular...
What type of action?
So it's either like a disciplinary action or whatever they did.
That's the company doing it. It's not dealing with courts.
Totally
typically...
not seen as anything separate.
I once had this situation that there was an employee, and he happened to not have been Jewish, but this is when we would have... An employee went and he copied the hard drive of the president of the company and was threatening to send it off to a governmental agency. To me, even if you were Jewish, that's a time that you immediately go to secular court. That's like freezing somebody's assets. You need to get that restraining order quickly. So what we did in that case is we got in touch with the guy's wife, and she was in a fight with him. And we sent investigators over to their house, and she gave all that property back, gave the hard drive, gave all of his computers over to our investigator. So that's we have to deal with it that way. But in that case, you know, typically if it's a disciplinary action, it's just the company, you're not dealing with a court. But if it's something like egregious, you need to take immediate action.
Okay, but Robin, if you're able to do it within your company, it's not seen that way, and you have like internal disciplinary hearings, like you have like a mediator, maybe more on the lines of mediation, but like if there's a guy judging the case, disciplinary action, and he's a Jew, and the employee is also Jewish. Is that problematic?
So we're going to talk about Amir Tashem. Our next step will be our talking about arbitration and mediation. Okay, very good. Guys, have a great week.